Tonight we begin a series on the man Joshua, whose name is the Old Testament version of that of Jesus in the New Testament. The book of Joshua, chapter 1, is where we look at for our text this morning, this evening, the first five verses of chapter 1, which is one part of the commission that God gives to Joshua for his work. Moses died. The death of Moses was hard for the children of Israel. For 40 years, he's the only leader that they knew. They trusted him. And then, just when they're on the brink of going into the promised land, the land that God had promised to that nation, he's taken from them. That's not the right timing, they would have thought. Or we too sometimes might think that. But God shows us that his timing is different than ours, and he shows us that his servants, he doesn't really need. He maintains his cause, assuring his people that he will not forsake them, and he will lead them. Let's begin to read in Numbers chapter 27. In Numbers chapter 27, that's where God identified to Moses that it was to be Joshua that he was going to have follow him as leader. In Numbers 27, verse 15, let's read to the end of that chapter. And the Lord said unto Moses, and Moses spake unto the Lord, saying, Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, set a man over the congregation, which may go out before them, and which may go in before them, and which may lead them out, and which may bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord be not as sheep which have no shepherd. And the Lord said unto Moses, Take thee Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay thine hand upon him, and set him before Eleazar the priest, and before all the congregation, and give him a charge in their sight. And thou shalt put some of thine honor upon him, that all the congregation of the children of Israel may be obedient. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall ask counsel for him after the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his word shall they go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the children of Israel with him, even all the congregation. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. And he took Joshua and set him before Eleazar the priest and before all the congregation. And he laid his hands upon him and gave him a charge as the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. That charge specifically is recorded in Deuteronomy 31. Let's go there now. Deuteronomy 31. The journey of the children of Israel is through the wilderness is recorded in the book of Numbers. That brings them to the Jordan River, to the brink of Jordan, and to the entrance into the land of Canaan. The whole book of Deuteronomy is Moses' repetition of laws and a repeat of the history, a review of the history. And now Moses is about finished with his speech. Deuteronomy 31, the first eight verses. And Moses went and spake these words unto all Israel, and he said unto them, I am 120 years old this day. I can no more go out and come in. Also the Lord hath said unto me, Thou shalt not go over this Jordan. And the Lord thy God, he will go over before thee, and he will destroy these nations from before thee, and thou shalt possess them. And Joshua, he shall go over before thee, as the Lord hath said. And the Lord shall do unto them as he did to Sihon and to Og, kings of the Amorites, and unto the land of them whom he destroyed. And the Lord shall give them up before your face, that ye may do unto them according unto all the commandments which I have commanded you. Be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with thee. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. And Moses called unto Joshua and said unto him in the sight of all Israel, Be strong and of a good courage, for thou must go with the people unto the land which the Lord hath sworn unto their fathers to give them, and thou shalt cause them to inherit it. And the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. And now, Joshua 1. Chapter 34 of Deuteronomy records the death of Moses. And we can note that in verse 9 of Deuteronomy 34, Joshua the son of Nun was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands upon him, and the children of Israel hearkened unto him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. And then Joshua 1, the first five verses. Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of thy foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. May God bless our reading of his word. Again, note that this is just half of the commission that God gives to him. The rest is found in verses 6 through 9, which the Lord willing will treat next week. This is God's commission of Joshua, concerning the land of Canaan in particular. God promised this land. We'll look at that as we start the sermon itself. But then we want to see that there are efforts that are to be expended by the children of Israel, by Joshua and the children of Israel, but that they're accompanied then with divine promises. So the land promised, the efforts to be expended, and the divine promises that are given. In Genesis chapter 12, God called Abram unto a land that he would show him, told him to leave his father's house. He left most of them, but not all of them, and he traveled along the route of the trade route of the Euphrates River until he was due north of what now is the land of Canaan. There he stayed for a while. Then according to the speech or sermon of Stephen in Acts chapter 7, God issued a second call to Abram to leave. Terah, his father, had died there. It's possible that he left his brother Haran there because the city where they had abode while he was there was called Haran. Then God called him to go to the south. The promises that God gave to him in Genesis chapter 12 was Get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. Then we read, continuing in Genesis 12, that Abraham passed through the land unto the place of Shechem, unto the plain of Moreh, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said unto him, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. I will give unto thee this land. That land was a beautiful land, a prosperous land. In Deuteronomy 8, it was a land of wheat and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of oil, olive, and honey, a land wherein thou shalt eat bread without scarceness. Yea, thou shalt not lack anything in it. At least four times in Numbers and in Exodus already, that land is called proverbially the land that flowed with milk and honey, indicating how prosperous it was from an agricultural perspective, very fertile. Deuteronomy 8 says, in addition to all of that, there was something else about the land of Canaan. It was a land whose stones are iron, and out of whose hills thou mayest dig brass. It had all kinds of provisions underground that they would be able to use as they prospered in that land. A rich land. However, they weren't ready to take it. So that already in Genesis chapter 15, when God appeared to Abram and God passed through the two rows of meat, God said to Abraham already then, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. The land of Canaan was occupied by the Canaanites and Hittites when Abraham came there. But Abraham was just himself and his wife. In Genesis 15, he even didn't have Ishmael yet, just the two of them. He had servants that were well trained, but he didn't have any seed. He was not ready to occupy the land. 400 years had to pass. Without Abraham or the children of Israel's presence in the land of Canaan, they would have to go to the land of Egypt and dwell there for those 400 years. Canaanites would have to fill the cup of iniquity before the Lord could send the judgment of the armies of Israel upon them. Also, Israel had to develop, to grow, multiply, but also to develop themselves so that they would be ready to perform the work that now under Joshua they would have to perform. Now, God says, we're ready. In Deuteronomy chapter 9, God said this, hear, O Israel, thou art to pass over Jordan this day to go in to possess nations greater and mightier than thyself, cities great and fenced up to heaven, a people great and tall, the children of the Anakim, whom thou knowest and of whom thou hast heard say, who can stand before the children of Anak? Understand therefore this day that the Lord thy God, is he that goeth over before thee as a consuming fire. He shall destroy them, and he shall bring them down before thy face. So shalt thou drive them out and destroy them quickly, as the Lord hath said unto thee. Speak not thou in thine heart after that the Lord thy God hath cast them out from before thee, saying, for my righteousness the Lord hath brought me in to possess the land. But for the wickedness of those nations the Lord doth drive them out from before thee. Not for thy righteousness or for the uprightness of thine heart dost thou go to possess their land, but for the wickedness of these nations, the Lord thy God doth drive them out from before thee, and that he may perform the word which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Understand, therefore, that the Lord thy God giveth thee not this good land to possess it for thy righteousness, for thou art a stiff-necked people. Remember and forget not how thou didst provoke the Lord thy God to wrath in the wilderness from the day that thou didst depart out of the land of Egypt until ye came unto this place. Ye have been rebellious against the Lord. Also in Horeb ye provoked the Lord to wrath, so that the Lord was angry with you to have destroyed you when I was gone up into the mount to receive the tablets of stone, even the tables of the covenant which the Lord made with you. And I abode in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. I neither did eat bread nor drink water. And the Lord delivered unto me 2 tables of stone written with the finger of God, and on them was written according to all the words which the Lord spake unto you in the mount out of the midst of the fire in the day of the assembly. But now I'm ready to give it. And that's what he says here in the text. Verse 2, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Canaan was not earned because of the righteousness of the people of Israel. It was an unconditional gift. It was a gift of grace, undeserved love. And they, just like Abraham, were only in the position to receive what God gave. Hebrews 11, for by faith, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. He would receive what God gave, what God gifted. They had done nothing as a nation, and that history recorded in Deuteronomy 9 makes it very, very clear. From the day they left Egypt until the day that they were there with Moses and he was about to leave them, they were known as a stiff-necked and rebellious people. They would do nothing to inherit it. Even their battles would not warrant they're receiving it or earning it. But we ought to note this. There are those who say today yet that the children of Israel have to inherit the land and God has to fulfill the promises. So there are premillennialists that say before Jesus can come, He will come, and he will introduce a millennium of rule in the land of Canaan. Jesus will sit upon a throne, an earthly throne in Jerusalem, and for 1,000 years, that's when God will fulfill the promises that he made to Abraham and to the children of Israel. As a note concerning that, I would like you to look in Joshua 11, verse 23. 11, verse 23. The last verse of chapter 11. They had finished campaigns, battle campaigns, that took place over 7 years that are recorded here. And then when he comes to the end of those campaigns, we read this in 11:23. So Joshua took the whole land according to all that the Lord said unto Moses, and Joshua gave it as an inheritance unto Israel according to their divisions by their tribes, and the land rested from war. And if that's not clear enough, now look at Joshua 21. Joshua 21, the last three verses, 43 through 45. The Lord gave unto Israel all the land which he sware unto their fathers. Everything. The promise is fulfilled already. We don't have to wait for Christ to return to establish a millennial reign for that to take place. The Lord gave to Israel all the land which he sware to give unto their fathers, and they possessed it and dwelt therein. And the Lord gave them rest round about according to all that he sware unto their fathers, and there stood not a man of all their enemies before them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. There failed not of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. That's a good passage to remember when you face those premillennialists and those Jews who think that they still have some great kingdom to come. The land of Canaan is a possession that the children of Israel would receive after going through Jordan. And as such, the land of Canaan, with all the riches physically that were in that land, is a picture and a type of heaven. It's a picture and a type of heaven. Israel was conceived in Canaan, but developed in Egypt. They were baptized through the Red Sea. They lived their life of 40 years in the wilderness. Then they were going to have to go through Jordan, which means death, but a conquered death, to re-enter into the land of promise. That land is the land that Hebrews describes both in chapter 4 and again in chapter 11 as that inheritance that God has promised to us in glory. In chapter 4, we read in verse 8, and if Jesus, now that's the King James Version, just about every other version is going to make that Joshua. And that's really the idea. For if Joshua had given them rest, then would he not afterward have spoken of another day? If that was the final position, then he wouldn't talk about another day. So then you get the very familiar words out of Hebrews 11, 14 through 16. They that say that they're pilgrims and strangers on the earth, and they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. Then verse 16. Now they desire a better country, that is, in heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. The riches of the land of Canaan is a picture of the fullness of riches of salvation. Already now, we have a foretaste when we live in the consciousness that what Christ accomplished in his life of suffering and in his death is the fullness of the forgiveness of all of our sins, and that God takes all of the righteousness of Christ's obedient life and gives it to us. so that we know we stand before him as holy and as righteous because of the work of Christ. But he gives us this knowledge. This isn't home. In fact, he said to his disciples, I have to go to prepare a place for you. And in many senses, when he went to the right hand of God, it is from that position that he prepares us for our place in glory. So he uses all the different circumstances of our life, our pilgrimage, our walking through the valley under the shadow of death, to prepare us for the riches that are indescribable. Indescribable. In fact, that's the way he puts it in 1 Corinthians 2. Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him. We live in that consciousness, and we die in that awareness. In loving him, we know that he has prepared things too wonderful for even our hearts to conceive. We get the pictures in Revelation, but they're only earthly pictures of something that is so absolutely wonderful. We get a taste. We get a taste in the consciousness that we abide in Christ and that we live because Christ lives in us. But we're looking for when that day when not only soul but also body, we will experience the fullness of that salvation. That's the Canaan. But that Canaan would become the children of Israel's as a gift of God, but not without efforts expended by them. The land of Canaan wasn't vacant. It was occupied. It's filled with people who said, this is our land. These are our vineyards. These are our herds. These are our houses. These are our cities that we've built. And the walls reach up to heaven. We're going to stay here. And we're going to fight to defend this, our land and our property and our lives and the lives of our children. Giants, sons of the Anakim. And they were going to fight for it. Joshua and the children of Israel were going to have to go over Jordan, go into the land, and they were going to have to put on their armor and take out their swords. And all the land on which their foot would tread, which was already occupied, they would have to fight for. And God promised them that those people would fall before them and those cities would be occupied by the children of Israel. Interesting that the very first city was Jericho. And what did the children of Israel have to do to obtain that land, to receive that gift from God? They had to just walk around it and walk around it and walk around it. 6 days once, seventh day seven times, and then their silence was to end and they were to shout. And then the walls came tumbling down. And then they were to rush in and destroy and kill and burn everything that was living. Lest they think that everything was going to be easy, there was Ai. So they only sent a few thousand men And God taught them. 36 men lost their lives. 36 children lost their fathers. 36 wives lost their husbands because of the arrogance of the children of Israel. We just have to go there. They're all going to run away from us. God taught them that they would have to expend efforts. God would use that. But he also taught them that the possession of the land of Canaan would be a consequence not of their fighting, but of their faith. The possession of the land of Canaan would be a result not of their fighting, but of their faith. To conquer the land of Canaan, they first had to believe that God would go with them. I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. They had to go forward in that faith. Just as Abraham walked by faith, so his descendants and the children of Israel would have to walk by faith and in faith's obedience. Obedience to God's commands is faith's daughter. It's not something else from faith. It's faith's daughter. And there is perfect harmony between God's sovereignty and man's responsibility. Perfect harmony between God giving the land to Israel and Israel expending the efforts. And that harmony is this. God, in issuing the command, would accompany that command with his Spirit. And it would be that Spirit that would work within them the want and the doing of his good pleasure. That Spirit accompanies every one of his commands to his children and works within them the desire and the ability to perform the efforts that God commands. When God's people do that which is right, it is only because God has graciously worked in them to do that work. But God gives them the works. He gives them the want to do it, the will, and the doing of it. And then he takes those works and he says, now these are your works. Yours. Your works will follow you, Revelation 14, 13, into glory. I've done them. I've gifted them to you. But they're yours. When you do them, they're going to be corrupt. Now think again of what we had this morning. The efforts that we perform are just a small beginning of the new obedience that God requires of us. Just a small beginning. But that beginning is God's work. So when we're all finished, to God alone be the glory, always, for everything, for giving us the want and the will and the doing of his good pleasure. So he said to Joshua, you're going to have to go over through Jordan. You're going to have to go into that land. You're going to have to take the children of Israel. You're going to have to fight. But I give you these promises, and it's your faith in what I promise to do for you, which will be the instrument, the way in which you shall receive the victories. That's God's work of sanctifying. Sanctification is God's work of delivering those whom he has elected and regenerated and justified, but the sinners. But sanctification is that work of God whereby he so works in those elect, regenerated, and justified sinners that they are delivered from the defilement and the dominion and the power of sin. by working in us, one, the development of the image of God's Son, and number two, enabling us to walk in all the good works which he has prepared for us. But we walk in all those good works which God has prepared for us. And while God is working in us, we're called to obedience and to work out our salvation with fear and with trembling. Fear in awe of him, not of the enemies, but of him, and in the consciousness that he goes with us. At the risk of being repetitive, the Spirit of Jesus abides in those whom he has redeemed and justified. And it's by that Spirit that he works in us continual mortification of the old and a quickening of the new man. So that we're consecrated, we're devoted to a living God, to seek him, to love him, and to keep his commandments. So God said to Joshua, go. Just as he said to Moses and Aaron at the brink of the Red Sea, dark of night, raining, thundering, lightning, earthquake. They can see that there's a path, a wide path that goes into the Red Sea, but they can't see the end. They can see the beginning of the walls of water on each side. And God gave the command, go forward. Go. I am with you. Moses and Aaron went forward. God led his people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. When God takes a loved one very suddenly out of our lives, then there's a similar experience. God stops us in our fun, in our games. And all of a sudden, we don't have anywhere to look but up. And he makes us look at him. And he shows us, I'm with you. I haven't left you. I promised I would not forsake you. This is hard. It's not easy to trust and obey. It's heart-wrenching. It hurts. But he means it to hurt. Because that's how he makes us learn to trust a wisdom and a love that goes beyond our ability to comprehend. So Joshua is commanded, arise, go over Jordan, you and all of Israel. Three promises that God gives. First promise, there shall not any man be able to stand before you all the days of your life. There shall not any man be able to stand before you. There is no trial that you will not be able to walk through. Another way to say it is there's no trial that I will not carry you through. But he says, go forward. Walk by faith in my promise. When God says there shall not any man stand before thee, then he is declaring that he promises a very sure victory. God will make them invincible against greater foes. We look at the foes, and 10 of the spies said, we can't do it. And they persuaded the people. God said, okay, fill out the 40 years. For another 38 and a half years, you got to die in the wilderness. You're worried about what's going to happen to your children when you enter into such a land. I will show you. I'm going to bring them in, and you're not going to be able to go in. And when they go in, they're going to be invincible. Nobody can destroy them. I will use them to destroy their foes, mightier though they may be. Second promise. Joshua, you saw how I was with Moses. You saw how Moses worked with the people, how he endured, how he was the most humble, how he was used by God. I'm going to use you just as I used him. As I was with him, I will be with ye. You have every reason to be convinced. You've got the evidence, the concrete evidence, in what you saw for those 40 years when you served Moses, that I will be with you. Now, go forward. Let that knowledge, that observation, that history be your assurance. You really don't have to be gray to know the history of God's care of the church. We've got it. The young among us have it. Tomorrow they're going to learn more of the stories of the history of God's care of his people. We've got that history. As I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. There's no reason to be afraid. There's no reason to despair. That's the beauty of what we sang in Psalter number 115 before the service began. Hope in God. Hope in him. It may be overwhelming. It may hurt horribly. But look up and put your hope and trust in him. And then finally, those beautiful words, I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. I will not fail thee nor forsake thee. Do you know that those same words are quoted by the author of the book of Hebrews in Hebrews 13, verse 5. Let your conversation be without covetousness. Notice, this even hits the practical part of our life. Let your conduct be without covetousness, and be content with such things as ye have. For he hath said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. There's the quote from Joshua. So we may boldly say, Jehovah is my helper. I will not fear what man can do unto me. From Psalm 118, verse 6. God says, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. We boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. This biblical record of these first five verses of Joshua 1 are not just for Joshua and the children of Israel. They're recorded for us today, March 1, 2020. We are to turn our minds from that which we see to that which is unseen. And with our hearts, to have our hearts occupied with the knowledge of the Omnipotent One. There's a beautiful expression about Moses in Hebrews 11, verse 27, that only we can get. By faith, Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured, here it is, as seeing him who is invisible. As seeing him whom you can't see. By faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. Do you hear him? I will never forsake you. I am with you. I will help you. I will strengthen you. Love me. The heart of every one of my commandments is a call to love me as I show to you my love for you. Amen. Our Father, we thank thee for the promise of the promised land. That's not Canaan, but the heavenly Canaan, the rest that is to come. And as we perform our lives and live our lives here, we have the calling to love thee with everything we have and our neighbors as ourselves. May we walk performing that effort in the assurance of thy promises to us. Work by thy Spirit so that we want to do what thou hast commanded and that we do it, working out our own salvation. For it is thee who works in us to will and to do, so that all the glory is thine. It cannot be ours. We with Israel are a stiff-necked and a rebellious people. But thou art a God of grace. Thanks. Amen.